lapsed.
So, okay, yeah, I would suspect if I was working at the charcoal brick place and setting that up and there were gunfire around, I'd probably want to go home for
a while. The problem
was
we had to go closer to the gunfire to get out.
To get out, uh-huh. Uh-oh.
So, but we waited around till the gunfire stopped and then left.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time when we were driving out west of Da Nang, we would stop at the Vietnamese Army checkpoints and ask what the roads were like.
Okay.
If he said it was okay, we went ahead. If we didn't see him, we made an immediate U-turn and went the other way.
If you didn't see him even there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They normally would give us a scoop whether they thought the road was open that day or not. That was the summer of 63.
Yeah.
And that was during the period when I thought things were still relatively secure.
Mm-hmm. Some people said that they would check to see if the bus had come in from the next city.
Mm-hmm. That was later.
Probably. Yeah, because if the bus had come in, it was okay. The bus hadn't arrived yet.
Well, even as late as Christmas of 63, we were still driving the roads in jeeps.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I remember driving from Da Lat down to Nha Trang and then flying from Nha Trang back to Da Nang.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we were running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very interesting drive down through the tea plantations along that road.
Why? Why interesting?
It looked like something out of old China.
Oh, don't get it.
Yeah. Terrace.
Mm-hmm. Fields. Mm-hmm.
We went through a town called Top Cham, which is kind of more or less the capital of what used to be Champa. And we saw the big tower there and went and looked at it.
Mm-hmm. A little sightseeing.
Mm-hmm. And that does. After that, I do remember taking the motor scooter down 3rd province down, whatever that was, Binh Dinh, possibly. Drove my motor scooter down that far out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I have driven almost the entire area from the 17th parallel down to Da Lat over about a 2-year period on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Which wouldn't have been very smart a little bit later.
Would not have wanted to do that in 65.
Yeah.
Particularly after the Marines landed. Because now everybody, Americans, are target. They can't differentiate. There's too many of them.
Yeah, yeah. So you just pop one.
And I don't know what the guys did then, but if it had been me, I would not have been anywhere willing to go out in the boonies then as I was when I was there.
Yeah, no, that's when I think. Checking on the buses in town.
Became
and whether
important.
They had
it became important.
Became absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. And if the buses hadn't come in from the next town, you just didn't go.
There's a reason.
Yeah. 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 It's not because if they had a flat tire, you'll find out.
Usually they do get there if it's just a flat tire.
That's right. But, you know, if it's already like noon and the buses haven't come in from the next town.
That's probably a good reason.
Yeah. And a reason that you don't want to know the specifics of.
You don't want first-hand knowledge.
That's right. Yeah, okay. First-hand knowledge. Yeah. Maybe you'll be curious about the specifics later, but you could probably guess quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was good that you didn't feel really too much impinged on personally, although you saw a lot of things.
In the summer of 63, and during that real hot weather, we used to go down and sleep by the beach in South China Sea, just mm-hmm. the three of us.
The three, oh, this is your three?
Two Americans and the Vietnamese that were with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we had no air conditioning, of course.
Yeah.
And we hadn't had the fans were installed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we just go down by the beach and sleep, and of course about 3 in the morning an army truck would come up, and the soldiers, the first night they came out with their guns all ready. And before the month was out, they just waved at us when they went by, but they still woke us up when they went by. But I remember one night I woke up when the tide came in a little bit higher than normal, and a wave broke over my feet.
Uh-oh.
That's a nice wake-up shot.
Yeah.
There were no mosquitoes, and it was quite a bit cooler down by the ocean.
Yeah. No, makes perfect sense to me.
And at that time, of course, the bridge was open again.
Mm-hmm. No, I was there with you. I'd be sleeping right on there, too.
Yeah, because so it's morning time. We just got up, got on our bicycle, and went back into town.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a 15-minute bike ride. We were sleeping in what later became known as China Beach.
Like that television show?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
I remember when it was just a bunch of little bamboo huts with straw hat roofs selling ice cold drinks and beer,
mm-hmm.
dried squid,
mm-hmm.
and other delicacies you probably wouldn't want to eat.
I'd go for the squid.
Yeah, it was very good. Washed
yeah.
down with a barrel of roux.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about the other delicacies. What were they?
Well, I didn't eat them. I was
oh.
afraid to.
Oh, okay.
First of all, you don't wonder about sanitation.
Well, yeah.
But this dried squid, that could not be bad. You just tear it off like you would
mm-hmm.
a beef jerky.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me see. Collect plants again. There was a couple of more generic sorts of things. You've had the experience of teaching in the schools, or trying to, of going around and checking out sites so that AID would know how they're spending their money.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about both efficiency of AID and State Department. But what about IBS? How was that run? I mean, you had good things to say about Don as one individual, but
my team leader, I can't remember his name right now, I think his name was Stapleton, didn't get up to Da Nang all that often.
Mm-hmm.
And we were pretty much on our own for the first 3 or 4 months. Telegrams would be sent to Saigon and not answered.
Mm-hmm.
Our money that we needed to pay the rent, utilities for it, was not forthcoming. Our paychecks were behind. We were pretty thin on money. And I just thought, well, this is an undeveloped country, halfway around the world from the United States. Things can't be expected to run like a steel mill. So
okay.
I didn't complain.
Yeah. Well, you were already 25 or so when you volunteered. So you maybe had a little bit more maturity.
A little tolerance.
Yeah. Yeah, someone who's just fresh out of school says, why isn't everything here already?
Well, yeah. Well, we had to start a station from scratch.
That's right.
And
the school was brand new, the teachers were brand new.
And the rents were out of sight in Da Nang compared to what the budget we'd been given.
Mm-hmm.
It took several phone calls or telexes down to Saigon even to get them to raise the amount we were allowed to invest in the place. And it just took far longer to get the station established than they thought we should have, and
mm-hmm.
far longer than we wanted.
Yeah.
Because we were living out of a hotel and then
mm-hmm.
a flea bag apartment for a while. We had 3 different houses, but we finally found one that really we liked.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was in a row house, as you only could describe it, that had rats in it. The next one we found our landlord was cheating us on the electricity. There's 2 meters, but to 1 bill.
Mm-hmm.
We were picking up his.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder we were running out of money.
No wonder, yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
We couldn't get any refund on that.
Yeah, of course. He had a nice big freezer and everything, huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't think he had that, but he was getting free electricity.
Yeah.
He did have.
Yeah.
And communications was not IBS's fault.
No.
It was the French fault.
Mm-hmm. They were the ones who installed the first systems. Huh?
Let me say, they are the ones who were in charge of installing the first system.
Mm-hmm.
Post, the railroads, and so forth. There was an interesting observation by an Indian officer who was walking along the beach with me. He was part of the ICC commission then.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the observation, he says, if India had to be a colony, thank God we were a British colony. And I says, what do you mean? He said, I've been to the Belgian Congo, I've been to Indonesia, I've been to... Where else have you been? Some other countries you've been to. And he says, at least the British left us something. A working civil service.
A good
railroad system. He says, the French in the Belgian, the Belgians in the Belgian Congo left absolutely chaos. The French didn't do much better in Vietnam. When the French left, Vietnam fell apart because they hadn't trained anybody to do anything
mm-hmm.
except coolie work.
Yeah.
And in Indonesia, you saw the results of that when the Dutch pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, at least the British left us something.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. They left them a language for the country, they left them a court for the system, and common law,
mm-hmm.
and the civil service.
And the railroads.
That's part of the civil service.
Well, I was thinking of the infrastructure,
yeah.
At least the physical infrastructure they
developed very well. Well, the French did build a railroad, but the Vietnamese didn't know how to run it.
Well, yeah, of course not. That's your civil service. They didn't really have.
But when the Japanese came into Vietnam, there was 14,000 Frenchmen running the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ran it for the Japanese until the Japanese interred them late in 44.
Right, yeah.
Then the Japanese ran it.
Such as they did. I mean, that was kind of late in
by
the
By that
year.
Time, they were really worried about running things efficiently.
No, they were just about, they were worried about running.
Right.
They knew what was on the wall.
Yeah.
So, is your assessment of IVS what? Let's give it a one to ten.
I think they do a better job than AFSC, and I'm familiar with some of their work. They certainly are not as political as AFSC has become.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they're doing is comparable to some of the Mennonite missions or some of the real Quaker missions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, by divorcing themselves from the State Department, they've made a real step upward in credibility.
Yeah. You're still getting their newsletters
yes,
and such
I still
that they
get
send
their,
out.
I, they've kept up with me.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually very surprised at how many, because about 700 people altogether served in both Laos and Vietnam. We didn't bother with Cambodia. That would have been a little bit more than
that.
That
had about 5 or 10 more.
Well, but they still kept up with about 400.
Mm-hmm.
And that's damn good, because I know that when Peace Corps started, well, actually Peace Corps didn't start it, the official Peace Corps, but when a return volunteers group for Peace Corps started, they got most 15%. Because
mm-hmm.
so many people
shouldn't be on the mailing list.
Or because there hadn't been the interest by Peace Corps to keep up with former volunteers, that when people started it, they were starting really from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's built up since, but it's still 25-30%. They're still, you know, continuing to look for more people,
mm-hmm.
things like that. So to keep up and have like a 60-70% mailing list, after so many years,
mm-hmm.
and some of the parts of the mailing list which are just names, it doesn't say, but those are some people who have already died.
Yep.
So it's probably really closer to the
75%
to 80.
75 to 80.
Yeah. That's damn good.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an awful long period of time.
30 years for me.
That's right. For people to keep up. And I would suspect that one reason that they wanted to keep up was that this is a potential resource base in terms of contributions, voluntary contributions.
I'm sure most of us, like myself, do contribute.
Yeah. Well, since I met Don in Buffalo, when I was still a graduate student, and he would come into my advisor's courses as a kind of resource lecturer, you know,
mm-hmm.
tell people what it was like. You know. Since I got to know him, I thought, well, this is, I don't contribute a dime to Peace Corps.
No, why not? It's a government agency.
Well. But I think that IVS does better work.
Mm-hmm. I think that people get a better return on their investment with IVS than most other organizations.
Yeah. So I don't write them much because I'm still battling.
You could always contribute to IVS if you don't contribute to the Peace Corps.
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I have for years.
Yeah.
I mean, long before Mark talked to me about this project.
I was able to proceed my monthly meeting and yearly meeting also to support IVS.
Your monthly meeting and?
Yearly meeting.
Of what?
Quakers.
Oh, is that so?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
I was on the Finance Committee yearly meeting for 6 years and then the treasurer of my local monthly meeting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Been able to persuade him to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, that's, it's, I think, worthwhile. I mean,
They like having the organizational support to show. IVS back in Washington.
Yeah. Well, it's important for
I think St. Louis Friends Meeting is one of their sponsors, supporting organizations on their mailing.
Yeah, I mean, and if they're going to continue to maintain integrity and try to, you know, they might want to combine with a few government projects on a selected basis, but to completely, all right. Let's get into the contract here. Was there any way to work effectively with AID? Paying all the bills.
It allowed IVS to hire more volunteers than they would have been able to otherwise at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it also involved getting FBI screening, security clearance for all of us, which if we'd been a completely private organization, they would not have bothered with.
Mm-hmm.
They might have done a criminal check and then been done with it. And most of the people who volunteer wouldn't do that anyway. But I said the biggest problem I got had between April and September and July was getting my security clearance from the FBI. It seemed to take forever.
Well, you radical steel workers, I'll tell you.
But, radical. It could have been because of the Quakers that took them so long.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a thought.
They had a lot of territory to cover, mm-hmm. based on where I'd lived and so forth.
Mm. Yeah. But was there any, other than being able to...
I never thought the State Department was really that helpful to us in the field.
Mm-hmm.
More of a hindrance in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly this old guy that came up with the technical school in 63,
yeah.
64. He was on his last tour. All he did was complain about the terrible conditions. No air conditioning. The servants were abominable. The house was too small. He only had two cars, one for himself and one for his wife. And the chauffeur drove him. The guarder was incompetent. And he couldn't really do anything, but his yard was always green and kept up. She never shined his shoes right. The maid never shined his shoes right. I didn't even wear shoes. He just listened to this guy complain for 3 months was enough to drive a volunteer up the wall. And knowing he was getting paid a minimum of $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That was take home.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't have to spend
plus all the perks
it.
And all.
No, he didn't have to spend it.
Yeah.
That was
in the bank.
All his expenses were picked up by the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
They shipped his car over from the States and then gave him a car when he got here,
mm-hmm.
to do his work in. Well, of course. Do that for me. I had to sell my car at a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
They wouldn't ship mine over for him. I couldn't afford the gas for it anyway on what they were paying me.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about the ties of linking IVS to a government project.
To the people in the field, I don't think we were cognizant of it.
Okay. It was not a problem.
The only time I knew they were even interested when some gal took a week's vacation and came up to Da Nang and wanted me to show her the sites. And I showed her sites that I'm sure nobody had ever shown her.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the Vietnamese Officers Club for bingo night.
Mm-hmm.
We ate at the local restaurants. We bicycled out to Marble Mountain in the summer heat.
Mm-hmm.
She stayed in a hotel with no air conditioning.
Who was she?
I don't remember her name.
What kind of position in the structure?
I don't know what her title was down in Saigon.
Okay.
But I was told to be nice to her because she was coming up.
Well, you should have been. That was terrible.
Well, I did the best I could. There was, at the time she was there, the only thing playing was a Vietnamese movie, which was a French movie with Vietnamese subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't speak French and couldn't read Vietnamese subtitles, you were a complete loss. And I think it was not even Romaji Vietnamese, it was Vietnamese, it could have been Japanese characters.
Mm-hmm.
That was occasionally on the screen.
Uh-oh.
So you skipped that. Bingo night at the Vietnamese Officer Club. Now that was different. I even like to go over there sometimes. And of course, I didn't want to take her out to the Special Forces camp for dinner. I'm sure one of them would have scarfed her up in a hurry. And that's not what she said she came up with, see?
Mm-hmm.
We went to the Cham Museum. And
she wanted to see Vietnamese culture and society.
She wanted to see something of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So that took her to word, that's what she wanted.
Yeah. There's no sense in going off to any kind of American military installation.
No.
There's plenty of those in Saigon.
Oh, yeah, and better ones.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is the provinces for her.
The big social event in Da Nang while I was there was that our four colonels in I Corps invited their counterparts over to McVie headquarters for a party.
Mm-hmm.
And since there were no American wives over there, they invited a couple of some of the local girls to be hostesses,
mm-hmm.
who I'm sure these colonels had met on their own in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And you could look at these Vietnamese officers looking for a place to crawl into because they were so embarrassed that their host were doing that.
Yeah.
I took one look at the situation and said, oh my God, what are these idiots done now? Like, I came in with one of the colonel, who was the mayor of Danai. I came in with him. We met him at the curb and came in.
Uh-huh.
I could just see his face looking at these girls. He knew exactly who they are, how much they charge, what they did when you got them, and so forth. And he looked like he was almost furious. He just told him.
Mm-hmm.
You know how an Oriental will not show it.
Oh,
he was showing it.
Mm-hmm.
His body language was so loud and clear. And I said, my God, what have you guys done now? I certain they sent back American Vietnamese relations to Europe just by that one night. This is why they don't give these guys any orientation in cultural mores. The party should have been all men, a stag affair. Because
mm-hmm.
no Vietnamese wives were invited.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they were invited, they didn't come. And I knew that. Even though they said, bring your girlfriend to the Americans. No American had a girlfriend there. He had a loved one, but not a girlfriend. I just couldn't believe that they'd do something that stupid.
Yeah. God, no, that is pretty dumb.
I picked that up in Saigon in 6 weeks. When you entertain, we could go out with IVS girls and guys with our counterpart Vietnamese types. Some would bring their wives because it was understood that this was civilian social,
mm-hmm.
not military social.
Mm-hmm. But not in military.
No. Not in a foreign country where there are no American wives. You might have got away with bringing your wife to Germany, maybe, or Britain. But the wives would have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been their title.
Mm-hmm. But not these things.
Not hostesses.
No. No, you leave them in the bar.
They're best out of sight and out of mind when business is conducted.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
that's what this really was. It was a business meeting, it was after hours in a social environment.
Yeah, if I was the mayor, I'd be insulted.
Oh, he was.
I would have just...
He never said a word to me about it, but I could... I detected a real coldness for a while between the 2 years in my working relationship, even at my level.
I was thinking, if I was him, I might have just turned tail and walked out.
He couldn't do that.
Why not?
He was the mayor.
So?
If he left, all the other Vietnamese general officers would have had to leave too.
Right.
And they weren't about to.
There's
military contracts to be had for billeting.
But still, you know.
A Frenchman would have walked out.
Because
he would have known that was the correct thing. See, the Vietnamese didn't know what was correct to do with these guys at that point. They knew what was going on was wrong. They knew it was an insult to them, but they didn't know how a Westerner would have acted. A Frenchman would have taken one look, coldly left.
Yes.
A German would have spit on the floor.
And then left. Yeah. I was thinking I would have spit on the floor and left, and I'm going to put me right into the crowd category. No, because that's exactly...
A Brit would have just kept a stiff underlip. But he would have been very cold to his host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't have done the British thing.
And the Vietnamese did not know the French well enough to know that's what a Frenchman would have done.
Mm-hmm.
Because the French knew better.
Sure.
The French never brought their mistresses to these affairs. That was a affair de coeur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was not business.
Yeah, this is business, you know.
Yes, sir.
You don't do that.
So, anyway, that's another little thing why I made the comments I had about our aid program. These guys, they should have had at least a month, 6 months, language and cultural training before they ever stepped foot in that country.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly before they had any dealings with their counterpart. If they couldn't get it and say, the later people in military intelligence were trained in language for up to 18 months in Monterey before they ever went to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And included a grounding in cultural mores. And this is what this fellow in special, the military intelligence told me was he did. He had to extend a year service to become an interpreter or intelligence officer.
Okay.
But as part of that, instead of after his 18 weeks at Buck Root Camp, they sent him up to Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
for language training. And he said he had a very competent language teacher who was now living in France, came to Monterey for these language lessons.
So he got language and culture, but
before he ever set foot in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was going out there doing is trotting around whatever our American forces would capture a POW, he'd do the interrogation before they got brought in.
Yeah.
And he told me your interrogation technique. He says, we know your unit's been here, here, and here. Today you're here, where you were caught. And of course, the Vietnamese couldn't imagine that we'd know all that. And so they'd break him down by being kind to him. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't know this beating that they would do. But he would say, well, there's no point in keeping anything from these guys. They already know it. They're just asking questions that confirm some things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they'd open up. None of these stories about taking two prisoners and tossing one out of a helicopter, that was not necessary.
At least for this guy.
Well, for military intelligence in general. He said that their whole group operated that way.
Mm.
He said there were 12 or 13 of them up in Plum Tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go on to another thing. A real general question. Well, it's kind of a two-part thing. From your own experience, this personal experience and perceptions. What do you think the IVS mission was in Vietnam, if you would put it into a few words?
It was sold to me at the time as being people to people.
Mm-hmm.
It was described as an outgrowth of Harry Truman's Point 4 program.
Okay.
And I bought it at the time.
Mm-hmm. How close did IVS get to those goals?
I think the agriculture workers were far more successful than us in education.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was telling you before the tape was turned about the turmoil in the school administration that I didn't even know was going on. I'm not even sure Saigon knew was going on. Some of the teachers we were training were not even permanent staff at the school.
Right.
And whatever I was able to do would have had to have been done all over again in the next 2 years after I left, if it was possible then.
That was on the tape. That was when we were talking. Yeah. Okay.
So, in terms of what I feel, I got far more out of this experience than I think the Vietnamese did.
Mm-hmm. What caused the shortfall for the education folks? I mean, yours is very specific. Well, it was a very new program and a new school and, you know.
That's it in a nutshell.
Okay.
The people we had running IVS over there had, at that time, about 6 years experience in agriculture work.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they had done wrong in the first few years had been corrected.
Oh.
We were still making the mistakes when I was there.
Okay.
For instance, the education team member at the regular high school teach English, only was there 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
He was not replaced.
Mm-hmm.
The home ec teacher we were supposed to get for the test school never showed up while I was there anyway. And of course this USAM guy sticking his oar in. I was unfortunate, the other three schools that had these USAM advisors, I was the only one that stuck around at the school. One of them never ever came out to the school, and the other one only spent 2 or 3 days a week at the school.
Hmm. You got some guy who was conscientious, huh?
Unfortunately. If the term I was incompetently conscientious.
Yeah, and a jerk to boot.
No, he was not a jerk. He was a professional vocational trainer, and he had also had been in other countries. He'd been in five other countries doing the same work. But again,
uh-huh.
No language training,
mm-hmm.
No culture
mm-hmm.
training.
Mm-hmm.
Come in, do it the American way. Or else.
Well, I was thinking of all his complaining about these little
things.
That's
the American way, because if he'd been grounded in the culture, he would say, hey, I'm living pretty high on the hog. The teachers were very cold to me for the first few weeks until they found out I was getting paid just the same amount they were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they loosened up a little bit. The vocational teachers already, because they spoke better English, caught on real fast to the fact that I was coming in at their level. Which was paid about middle-class Vietnamese wages.
Yeah.
This is what a professional middle-class person was getting, 100 a month.
Okay.
Roughly. And the teachers, of course, thought I was getting far more than they, of course, this time, I was an American getting paid so much. They changed when they found out I was paid the same, you know, riding a bicycle to school, that sort of thing, when they had motor scooters. I was eventually able to persuade Saigon to get me a motor scooter for the part of the last year. So I would be up to their level.
Yeah. That's cute.
It was kind of also kind of rough in the rainy season, riding around a bicycle, trying to look like professional.
Yeah, yeah.
Floorboards on the motor scooter, at least kept my pants dry.
Mm-hmm. So the shortcomings really are not so much with IBS, you know, and or the war situation, at least at your time, but more in the particular circumstance of your own assignment.
Yeah.
And the fact that the ED program as a whole was new.
We were still learning how to run it.
Yeah, and the gremlins had to be found and dealt with, and, you know.
And if there's probably some of the gremlins I caused, maybe some of them that other people caused. I never really sure of that.
Well, but you had to see where the rough spots were going to be before you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that basically the first year went pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were no expectations on either side.
Was the school
and the ministry. And the ministry.
Yeah, and the whole ministry, because they never had to deal with
USA.
They dealt with
they'd never
with
dealt
foreigners.
With USAID before.
Oh, even USAID?
No.
Okay.
That all started in 1962 with aid to the schools, I think. The school started a year before it got there.
Okay. So maybe they've been dealing with aid as far as contracts to build the stuff a little bit in advance.
Not how to run.
But not how to run it, not the day-by-day
and
grind.
They were running it the way the French were.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm sure the French run the tech schools rather competently.
And so they never had to deal with the AID advisors, such as the guy who wanted to shine shoes.
Yeah.
You know.
A Frenchman would have expected that, but he wouldn't have fussed about it.
Right.
He would have beat up the servant until it was done right.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to admire the French sometimes, I guess, even if they didn't leave them very much behind.
Yeah.
So, as a kind of wrap-up, because I think we've covered quite a bit here, how do you look back on the IBS influence on your own life?
Well,
because we've defined it as really so important.
Well, it did. I said I've volunteered with American Youth Hostels since I've come back with three chapters, four, I guess, actually. St. Louis, Minneapolis, Chicago, and San Jose, which was then part of San Francisco's group. Been active in my meeting, as an officer and a finance committee member. Basically, the techniques I learned as a volunteer over there, I was able to bring home and apply to working with American volunteers and on a different level, on a different scope, under not war conditions, but stood me in good stead.
Yeah.
Just as an example, I salvaged the Minnesota Council for AYH when after the time I went up there. They were just about to go under.
The Minnesota Council for
American Youth Hostels.
Okay.
And today that's one of the better councils in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I went out to San Jose and the group there was just about to collapse when I got there. I resurrected them. They were just a club when I was there and they're now a full-fledged council. So I got to Chicago. I just sat on the board and criticized the office. And after I came back from Chicago, St. Louis, I decided I had done enough volunteer work for the AYH.
Yeah.
Time to work for myself.
been more active in my church since then.
So this has been a personal thing that you've taken back and applied again and again. What about work in terms of profession?
Well, the subject of Vietnam came up in every job interview I had.
Is that so?
Yes. They says, "Oh, what's this thing you did in Vietnam?"
Oh, okay. All right.
And 5 minutes, that's all I wanted to hear about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But just wanted, there's somebody who's been to Vietnam, not as a military.
Mm-hmm. But you went back to the engineering.
Oh, yes.
So as far as, you didn't go off and decide, I'm going to work in construction, try to work in third world countries, or things like that.
Well, actually, as far as an engineer goes, I've always been happier building things than running things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of what came out of that experience, but it probably was like that before I went over.
Okay. Yeah, no, sometimes the effect would change people's professions and such. Other times, not.
Well, one of the outgrowths was I became a welding engineer after I came back from Vietnam instead of being a metallurgical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that was the shop experience and welding in Vietnam.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I was helping the teacher teach the kids how to weld. Part of that was finding something for them to weld.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then when it didn't work right, trying to figure out what went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some very, very good welding craft people in Vietnam. And I've got pictures of them on my computer that show some of their craft if you'd like to see them when we finish this.
Yeah.
You got time?
Yeah, I think I've got some time. You do, too. I mean, you said you wanted to end it by what?
About now.
About now, okay. Yeah, the only other thing I might ask is, have you thought about going back for a visit?
Yes. Matter of fact, General Electric was going to build a power plant in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And I used to work for the division of GE that built power plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote their Asian manager, and I'm still waiting to hear from him. Would he like someone to go over there and get the welding program set up for this power plant to build erect a
fantastic.
And I'd love to go back.
Yeah.
Even if it was only for 3 or 4 months.
Oh, no, I think that would be about right.
That's what I said. My wife says longer than that, she'd get upset.
Well, you know, you've got...
But I said, I've got enough Vietnamese, we can very easily, I think, get the welding procedures translated. I think I know where to find people who run the welding program through the technical schools over there. They're still there.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to stay away too long. I mean, you've got roots.
It would take about that long to get the program up and running.
Yeah, and I see photographs of kids up here. And
oh, yeah.
You know, you probably wouldn't want to stay away that
long. My kids are out of college.
But still, you'd want to get back. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't want to be away another 2 years.
Well, I wouldn't want to stay with it long enough to get a tax-exempt income.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much for today.
Okay. If you want to take 5 minutes, I'll show you some of the parts and crafts of Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. Let me turn this off.